Call the next case.
Good afternoon, my police report. My name is Charles Lawler Jr. I represent the appellants who are the landowners in this case and their appeal against Atlantic Coast Pipeline, LLC, better known as ACP. Before I begin, I'd like to request 2 minutes for rebuttal.
All right.
In this case, the trial court erroneously allowed ACP to enter landowners' properties in Nelson County for 17 days to perform numerous surveys and additional activities before ACP had obtained a certificate of public convenience and necessity, and most importantly in this case, before ACP had obtained the power of eminent domain. Now, the two assignments of error that are before you today are, one, that ACP's entries onto landowners' properties were not authorized by VA Code 56-4901, and two, those entries, as applied, rose to the level of being an unauthorized taking of private property for private use and without just compensation. The landowners in this case asked this court to reverse the trial court's order and to remand these cases back for a jury trial and just compensation.
How would you measure the just compensation if the right of exclusion under common law is in fact a stick in the bundle of rights? Of course it is. But how would you measure a 7-day deprivation of the right of exclusive possession?
Sure, Your Honor. I'm glad you asked that. This case, I think it was 17 days.
Sorry.
For the record.
17 days.
I would measure it with the fair market rental value, I think, would be one way of appropriately measuring the just compensation owed in this case.
So it would be a battle of the experts on what a reasonable licensee and a reasonable licensor would think the value of 17 days on this property, given the work sheets that they had agreed upon, would be.
Yes, Your Honor, and also maybe if it came out that they actually removed any property or caused any damages, I think that would also be part of the just compensation trial as well.
Right, but the intangible loss to the right to exclude, which Blackstone said was at the very heart of the private property doctrine, that could be theoretically measured. But if it were too speculative, of course, it wouldn't matter if there's a taking or not. There wouldn't be any recovery. You would accept that, right?
Yes, Your Honor. And I don't think we're here before the court today saying that all entries on the private property are somehow takings. And I know that there's been a lot of say by the appellees in this case that, you know, of course, first responders go on people's properties, firefighters or cops.
Those are police power entries. They have nothing to do with takings.
You're right, Your Honor, and I think their point was that those are entries that are made on properties that are, in fact, not takings without just compensation.
Why would you be entitled to compensation at all as opposed to damages under 5649.01?
Well, I think the damages part of that statute refers to when companies come on the property, they do their surveys, and in this case, the word survey, it's open for interpretation. I always thought of a survey as being a guy with an orange suit and a tripod out on the side of a road taking photographs or making a few samples. But in this case, ACP did a lot more than that, or at least the trial court gave them the power to do a lot more than that. But I think as far as the damages clause in the actual statute itself, it basically says that if ACP comes on the property and they actually cause damage to the property, then At that point, they owe the landowners compensation for that damage.
Under the statute?
Correct.
Has anyone adopted your theory of damages of this fair rental value?
Well, I think you have to look, I mean, in
because, for example, with a trespass, you know, which is an analogy that comes to mind, you know, if they damage your trees or your property, of course you get compensated for that. But typically, it's the nominal damages if you don't have those things. So it just seems a little exotic to me that you have this, you know, fair rental value. And where's that coming from?
Well, I think that would come, I mean, for example, when ACP builds their pipeline, they don't just put the pipeline on everyone's property. For example, they might take a temporary access road to use a specific owner's property for a temporary amount of time. Now, when they do that, I don't think even ACP would dispute today that they owe those owners compensation, even if they're only going to be using that road or that area of the property for a very limited duration. So I don't really see any difference between you know, those cases and then this case, to where basically they're, you know, part of our argument is also that they basically exceeded the scope of the statute. And I think when you know, there's no magic formula for condemnation cases, but I think when you put all the facts together and you basically you know, look at the totality of the circumstances, you'll find that in this case there was an actual taking.
So let me go to the last point you make. In a pure eminent domain context, after surveying and after the FERC certification, they, let's say for the sake of argument, they condemn a piece of property, but they can't get to it. It's a flag lot or something like that. And they come to the adjoining owner and says, look, for 17 days we need to march our crew back and forth over your property. And they say, well, sorry, but I own the property and you don't, so I'm sorry, I don't want you to do that. They could condemn the right to march over the property for 17 days in order to service the property that's actually being condemned. And there would be a battle of the experts there, wouldn't it?
I would agree.
So why is this different, if it is?
Well, I think this case here today is two parts. First, an interpretation of the statute. And, you know, ACP wants to interpret the statute to mean that they only have to meet one of the requirements. And the statute actually says that they have to show that their surveys are necessary, first keyword there, one, to satisfy any regulatory requirement, and then the next keyword there, and for the two, for the selection of the most advantageous location or route. Now, they've asserted that they only need to make one of those requirements. And I think as far as the eminent domain power, that's up to FERC. Once FERC says, hey, ACP, you submitted your application, we think this pipeline is in the public interest, at that point, they have condemnation power. No one's disputing that. But prior to that time, they don't have condemnation power. And prior to that time, they're under no regulatory requirement by FERC. And the best way, I think, to think about that is simply, if ACP submits their certificate to FERC, FERC says, ACP, we don't think this pipeline is in the public interest, then at that point, the pipeline doesn't go forward, and ACP has no need, or rather are under no regulatory requirement to complete those surveys.
Help me understand your argument, counsel. If I read the and as an or, and then I go to 5649.01, why are we talking about just compensation as opposed to damages when 5649.01 gives them the authority to survey?
Well, I think it's a limited statute, Your Honor. I think it gives them only the power to survey, and then once again you have to go to what actually surveying means, but I think it only gives them the power to survey in a limited circumstance, assuming they meet both Romanets of this subsection A of this statute. And I think as far as the damages clause, I don't think that's necessarily something that's before our argument here today, but I think the damages clause just says that if they do damage the property, that at that point in time, the owner has a claim for compensation for the damage done.
But your takings argument, as I understand it, doesn't depend at all on the disjunctive conjunctive debate. It is.
No, Your Honor, and also I'd like to make clear before this court, we're not here arguing today that 564901 is unconstitutional on its face. And I think in the majority of these cases, the government, or in this case the private utility company, they follow the statute. So there's not really a case in these instances. But in this case, they have exceeded.
In what way have they exceeded it?
They've exceeded the scope of the statute. If you look at the facts of this case, Your Honor, that were before the trial court, ACP, they didn't just, first off, the statute says that they can come on the property for a date. There's no word in there that says dates. It says date. But they wanted to come on the property multiple times. And they didn't just come, the facts in this case, they didn't just come one series of times. They came three different series of time over a period of almost 6 months.
Did they provide notices when they came?
They did, Your Honor. They provided notices. And in this case, the property owners withheld consent. And we're not saying that everyone should withhold consent when a company such as ACP wants to survey, but when property owners do not want, when they do not consent to that, assuming they should not, or ACP should not be allowed to survey unless they meet the requirements of the statute. And in this case, they did not. They didn't meet it, and then beyond that, they exceeded the activities that were allowed.
So if they had actually followed your version of the proper interpretation of the statute, done everything right statutorily, paid for whatever damages that were incurred by virtue of the entry, you're not arguing that the intangible right to exclude, since it's not an element of statutory damage, violates the Virginia Takings Clause. Am I right? Because you said you're not challenging the facial.
We're not saying that was a tough question. I'm trying to comprehend it. We're not saying the statute on its face is unconstitutional.
Okay, let me repeat the question because it's crucial to me. Assume this hypothetical without conceding anything. They come on the property. They follow exactly what the statute says. They do nothing wrong. They get the sticker. They don't get the sticker. Whatever the statute requires. They don't damage anything. But if they do, you know, kick a bucket over, they'll buy you a new bucket. There's zero physical property damage that's not compensated as the statute contemplates, right? Assume all that without conceding it. They still took something from you. They took the intangible right to exclude you from being there in the first instance. That's a facial challenge. That's not an as-applied challenge. But it sounds like that's not your argument.
Yes, Your Honor. I would say in your hypothetical, if they follow the statute correctly, assuming also that they didn't remove anything from the property, and in this case, they had the actual permission to do that, but I think in your hypothetical, assuming they follow the statute and they don't exceed the scope of the statute, then yes, 100% there would be no takings argument. But that's far from what the facts are in this case.
And so again, I'm not understanding why the damages provision does not satisfy your needs. If you're not arguing that this statute properly applied violates the takings clause, then the General Assembly has provided for the excess day, the extra hole dig, the 12 by 12, by saying you're entitled to damages if they damage your property.
And that's a great point, Your Honor, and I think the distinction there is that in eminent domain cases, it's not always just about physical damage to the property. You can have something, a company can be on your property for so long and literally be doing nothing, but they can be there for so long that possession itself rises to the level of a taking. And I think that's part of the facts in this case, that there was more to it than them just having 17 days, the ability to be on the property for 17 days over a period of almost 6 months, time that obviously people had to accommodate them. But beyond that, in this case, as far as the facts are concerned, they were given the right to actually, by the trial court judge, to actually the ability to remove things from the property and take them with them. And on top of that, they were given the ability to dig on the property, to actually dig holes and disrupt the property.
So that's what distinct. Because one of my worries is that we're going to turn every time a government agent goes onto property, maybe wrongfully, every time there's an alleged trespass into a constitutional takings case. So that can't be right. So what you're saying is all these other things is what moves it over into that column.
And once again, Your Honor, that's a great point, and I think it's you always hear about the floodgates argument. We don't want to open the floodgates to make every single entry on the property all of a sudden become a taking. And that's not what we're asking here. But
there is no floodgate. You don't have a taking as a matter of law if the police power is the predicate for the government action.
And that's a great point, too, Your Honor. But I think in this case, ACP will concede that they're not a government entity. They're a private company. And at the time, this is also a very important fact, that at the time that they went on the property, they did not have eminent domain power. Not at all during those 17 days or that span
of 6 counsel, didn't they have authority under 5649.01?
They had authority to survey for a limited purpose. That would be my position.
Okay. So I'm still trying to, I've heard every word you've said. I'm still trying to outline what the arguments are as I go back into conference. Presume for a moment that we affirm on assignment of error number one. I'm not asking you to concede that, but presume that we say that for purposes of assignment of error number one, 5649.01 was complied with. Okay? And so we're now looking at assignment of error two, your takings assignment of error. I want to know each, you don't have to argue it, but just give me each of the reasons why it's a taking if the statute was complied with. You say, number one, they did not yet have eminent domain authority, so no eminent domain. Number two, you say that they were there for 17 days.
Correct.
That's your second argument. Number three, you say that they left some damage behind, that they, or do you not?
I'm really trying
to outline
they had the power to actually, the judge granted them the authority and the power to actually take things off the property, whether it be an item, a historical artifact, anything, I'm not going to say anything they wanted, but obviously certain things, they had the power to take those things off the property and to remove them.
Okay.
So and not only that, they had the power to actually dig holes on the property.
Okay.
1.15 feet wide, I believe almost every 50 feet.
Okay. So you have four reasons why you believe there was a taking. No eminent domain, 17 days, removal of items, and holes or damage left behind. Is there anything else that is part of assignment of error number two?
The digging, as far as the archaeological digging that they were given permission to do, the amount of time that they were on the property, 17 days over a span of 6 months, which in my opinion, I think it's kind of misleading to say you're on the property for 17 days if that's the landowners having to accommodate that time for up to a period of 6 months. I think you covered it.
Okay. Okay, great. Thank you.
And also, your one more thing, Your Honor, the fact that they also had they were given the authority to have up to 22 people on the property at any time. We're talking about five different crews. And once again, this goes back to my argument that, before this case, I had thought of surveyors as being one guy with an orange suit on and a tripod doing one thing on the side of the road. ACP took this notion and they ran with it.
Would you think
what they did is okay if they had done it after they received the FERC certificate?
I think at that point in time they would have, under the statute, that, remember there's two parts of the statute. The first part that says the surveys have to be necessary for a regulatory requirement. And once again, our position is that until they get a FERC certificate that says, hey, ACP, we're going to approve your project, but it's a regulatory requirement that you finish these surveys that you haven't completed before you begin construction. And until that happens, they cannot meet the first subsection of that statute. And that is our position.
All right.
Thank you.
Your time's up. And actually, you went over about 4 minutes.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Ben Hatch on behalf of Atlantic Coast Pipeline. I'd like to take my time today to try to clarify some of the issues this Court has addressed with my co-counsel and hopefully set the record straight on a couple important points, I believe. First of all, there's, I think, some misconception about what the facts of this case are and what the posture of this case is. The proceedings below were proceedings that my client brought to seek a declaratory judgment and a motion for entry into property. They were not an adjudication of a claim of just compensation or anything of the sort. And so we brought a declaratory judgment complaint, and attached to that complaint the notice letters that were provided pursuant to the statute 5649.1. Those notice letters were used to establish compliance with the precondition requirements of notice before entry. And that's why they were attached. And as this Court may know, having heard the Chaffins case last year, and there was an issue that this Court found with one version of notices, well, this was the case that the Circuit Court in Nelson found those were inadequate at the Circuit Court level, and we revised the notices. And so let me set one thing straight. My co-counsel says they were on the property for 17 days. There's no record evidence of actually what the surveys were done after these proceedings happened. And so I believe what he's referring to is the notice that we filed in support of our second amended complaint in support of the declaratory judgment.
So the posture of the case, as you understand it, would not preclude the landowners from later filing a just compensation claim under the Virginia provision, claiming that the intangible right to exclude was facially rendered uncompensated by the Virginia statute, though authorized by it. So taking but no compensation on that stick in the bundle of rights.
They brought no claims in this proceeding. They defended against the declaratory judgment suit that we brought. And so what claims they may think they have in some other proceeding are not in this proceeding. They sought to dismiss our complaint in support of declaratory judgment.
So res judicata would not preclude that if your understanding of the proper procedure of the case is right. Am I correct there?
Well, Your Honor, that's not on here, and I recently did have a res judicata declaratory judgment case not under Virginia law, so I wouldn't want to speak specifically to Virginia law, but typically res judicata does not apply the same way to a declaratory judgment action as it does to a suit for damages. That's a general statement. I'd be happy to follow up under Virginia law. But the fact is that this was a case brought by Atlantic Coast Pipeline. The notices, which are were adduced for purposes of establishing authority to enter, because you have to provide the notice, they were attached to the complaint, and the judge found that they established that. But there's no evidence of any what happened afterwards. The court's decision was a decision, and this is found at JA 486, the court's judgment was a decision that we could enter for the purposes of 5649.1. It authorized nothing beyond what the statute allows, which, of course, it's a self-executing statute, but the court said we can do what the statute allows. And
have
so
you,
any claim
have you
that
argued mootness in this case at any point? Have you ever said, look, if you strip all the just compensation argument out, because there was no counterclaim for that, and it wouldn't be barred by some estoppel principle later, all you're left with is they said the statute didn't authorize it, we did it anyway, the trial court said we could do it, and we did it, it's done. And they're not asking for damages, because there was no counterclaim.
That's right, Your Honor. I don't think that the case is moot for the reason that we sought a declaratory judgment to authorize our entry. We secured that judgment. It was disputed and litigated, and they adduced many reasons that were overruled ultimately.
But you've already entered. You've done the surveys.
Right. But I think that's just a function. This also came up in the Chaffins case where I was arguing mootness, and ultimately the court determined it wasn't moot in that case.
Capable of repetition.
But in this case, this is, I think, just the fact that the action on which we sought a judgment has occurred. They didn't seek a stay or that sort of thing, but it doesn't render the underlying judgment that we secured moot. It still authorized our entry. Our entry was authorized by law, as reflected by the law and as reflected by the judgment. Let me try to clarify a few other things, though. So because I believe there's no evidence about what actually happened in the surveys, the claim is based on our notice letter. The operative notice letter, Your Honors, I think this is very important, is found at JA 266 to 67. There were three ultimately complaints. The operative one, as it comes to this court, was the second amended complaint. And I think it's important because that notice letter changed over time, and it changed in ways that are germane to the points raised today. First of all, this issue about being on the property for 17 days, I'm not sure where that number comes from, except that I think if you look at our notice letter at that JA site, and it listed a series of days within roughly a week for most of the dates, and it said this crew might be on between this one day, this one day, this crew 3 to 5, etc. Well, those were all overlapping. There was an overlapping time period. I think they get at 17 by counting each separate type of survey, even if it occurred on the same
day.
That's
because you have to have specialized crews that do archaeology for historical significance, environmental significance, or just the route itself?
Well, there are several crews, and there are several regulatory requirements, and different crews support those, Your Honor. But the point I'm trying to make, it wasn't 17 days in the notice letter. Those were an overlapping period of time. So unless you somehow count each crew to count for its own day, even if it's on the same day, I just think it inflates what the notice said. And the notice is in the record, and it speaks for itself, ultimately. But the court didn't say anything about 17 days. It didn't say anything about taking property off their property. This is another thing where the notice changed, and the operative notice that is at that JI site I gave you said that any archaeological items, that's the only one that would give rise to this removal issue, any archaeological items found as a result of the survey will be cataloged and given to the owner right there. So there's no issue about taking things off the property.
Is there a federal regulation or any federal requirement which is a necessity, not something convenient, but a necessity to be that required surveying prior to the FERC certificate?
Yes, Your Honor, in the way that necessary means in the
statute. So if necessary means convenient, which was quite a watershed moment in the history of this country, that it termed convenient when it said necessary. But if necessary means convenient, of course, there's no doubt. It's very convenient to survey before you file an application for eminent domain authority. But if necessary means necessary, and if requirement means required, assume that without conceding it. Show me a CFR provision that makes it necessary or required to do a pre-FERC certificate survey.
No, and very candidly, Your Honor, I wouldn't argue to this court that if you define necessary as absolutely necessary, as without which it will not occur, that none of the FERC requirements require that every single tract of land be surveyed.
Okay, what about required? If something is required, that means you have to do it. If it's not required, you don't have to do it, and it's not the end of the world. Is there a CFR provision that says, I require you, before you file that application, to survey over the objection of landowners? And if you don't do that, you're not meeting my requirements, so I'm not going to even consider your application.
There's no CFR provision that says exactly what Your Honor said. What I think is clear is that FERC is going to require these surveys. It's going to require them, you can do them beforehand, as we did a number, and they become part of your submissions to FERC, and they will become part of FERC's disposition.
The point is, FERC doesn't require compulsory over the objection of landowner surveys. Isn't that the issue? Of course they want surveys done. They ask you to do the surveys. But they contemplate that you have to ask for permission. You can't just march on someone's property without asking for it.
Well, there's pre-certificate, there's the certificate. The certificate is then going to require you to complete these if you haven't already done them. And so, one textually within the statute, Your Honor, it says any regulatory requirement. It doesn't speak to this pre-certificate and post-certificate. And I actually thought that the landowners made a very important concession in their reply brief, because they conceded that you can utilize the statute pre-certificate if the landowner either consents or does not object to the entry.
Sure.
And so if the statute, it seems to me, by virtue of that concession, can clearly be utilized pre-certificate, and I think that just shows that there's nothing in the statute that ties it to the point that you are in your application process.
Well, I don't understand that argument, because the whole point of the power of eminent domain is to be able to not be liable for trespass if you go onto somebody else's property, right? And so if you consent to it, then obviously there's no trespass. So, I mean, what's to stop any pipeline company from sitting in whatever city in America and deciding, I think we might put a pipeline in Virginia, and then they just start going on everybody's property saying, well, I'm going to get a FERC certificate eventually. I mean, the in-state statute is clear that you have to be a Virginia corporation who has the power of eminent domain in their back pocket all the time, right? That's not true of Atlantic Coast Pipeline.
Well, there's several parts to my answer, if I could, Your Honor. First of all, I think the key part of their concession is not when you agree that they can come on, but they also concede you can do it when there's no response from the landowner. And that wouldn't get you out of issues about consenting. I mean, if there's no response, that's not an invitation, and yet they concede it can happen. Second point, Your Honor, what's to stop any company from saying, I'm a natural gas company and I want to utilize the statute to come onto your land? Well, there's several things that would prevent that type of abuse. None of that's alleged here, but several things. One, the statute requires that the company, in order to fall within its terms, be organized for the bona fide purpose of operating as a natural gas company under federal law. We proved in the record below, and this was at the proceedings in support of the ultimate judgment, that we were such a company, that we had incorporated, and we had articles of incorporation to that purpose. And so we actually proved that we were a qualifying company. You can't just create some sham company that has no connection with an approved purpose.
So what's to stop every qualifying company in the nation that has the proper qualification at a state pipeline company from coming in and saying, I'm thinking about a FERC certificate. I'm going to apply for one in a year or two. And I need to select a route for it, obviously, and let them just have at it and go anywhere they want to in the state of Virginia, the Commonwealth of Virginia, and we've granted that authority to them.
Well, Your Honor, the statute doesn't tie the authority to having a pre-existing certificate from FERC.
I know that, but it does tie it, if you read and to a necessary regulatory requirement translated by your side of the case into a convenient regulatory suggestion.
And Your Honor, the word convenient would not be my word. I think as we define it in the brief, necessary, and whether you look to the Supreme Court or to this court's cases, it's reasonably and directly in support of. And certainly these surveys were reasonably and directly in support of our regulatory process. That's why you do them. That's why you have all of these, different aspects of your survey. It's all because FERC or some other regulator that has an interest in this process requires you to look at the environment and look at the route and organize it. And so certainly Your Honor's concern about couldn't anybody do that, that's not this case. We now have a certificate. It was obviously done in connection with that. We proved that in the record below. But what the General Assembly authorized is for companies that are organized for this purpose. And I think that word in the statute, organized for the bona fide purpose, shows that it didn't have to be an established company that already has four approved pipelines and is looking to build a fifth. They clearly contemplated a company like Atlantic Coast Pipeline that had formed for this purpose to be able to survey. And the benefit of it is not just to Atlantic Coast Pipeline, because, of course, once you have eminent domain, as Atlantic Coast Pipeline now has the eminent domain authority, agree with my co-counsel by virtue of the FERC certificate, all that surveying work helps you define the route that you're going to take and minimize any unnecessary use of eminent domain. And it also helped along the way if there was a route course correction that was needed that could take it out of the way of certain landowners' property.
And you said you now do have a FERC certificate?
That's correct, Your Honor. That happened subsequent to the proceedings below, and it was pointed out in their brief. It's not in the record technically, but it certainly has happened. And in fact, eminent domain proceedings are now ongoing. and the surveying work built up into the FERC certificate. You can see reference in the FERC certificate to surveying work that was done and findings that were made as a result of that, and then ultimately governs the approved route. I see my time has expired. Thank you, Your Honors. We ask you to affirm the judgment.
Thank you. No. Thank you. Your time's up. Court is adjourned.